Chapter 12. Brush Fire.
Meanwhile, as the chief rationale for our war in Iraq gradually unraveled against the backdrop of a looming presidential race, one piece of the Iraq drama continued to unfold. The story of how the identity of CIA agent Valerie Plame had been revealed as part of the growing partisan battle between the Bush administration and its critics on Capitol Hill and in the media. It was a saga that would increasingly come to affect me personally. Tuesday, September 30th, 2003, the day after I explicitly asserted that Karl Rove had not leaked classified national security information, Valerie Plame's identity, was a travel day. No White House briefing, just a gaggle aboard Air Force One en route from Andrews Air Force Base, where the world's best-known plane is based, to Chicago. The president was doing the usual VIP photo ops and speaking at a Bush-Cheney luncheon to raise money for the fast-approaching 2004 re-election campaign. Then he'd be meeting with area business leaders to highlight what he was doing to address economic concerns and help create jobs. About 8:30 p.m. the night before, the Justice Department had informed White House counsel Al Gonzalez that officials there had opened a criminal investigation into the Valerie Plame leak. The White House, he'd been told, should preserve all records that might be relevant. At Al's request, the department would send a formal letter to this effect on Tuesday. Al asked whether the White House needed to inform staff that evening or if it could wait until the morning. The Justice Department said morning would be fine. Since rumors of a criminal investigation had been circulating during the previous few days, I had been staying in close contact with Al and his deputy, David Leach, including the morning before I departed the White House with the president. I wanted to make sure I was up to date on any contacts from Justice, and I needed advice from Al and David about how to respond to questions from the press. Al informed the entire senior staff of the investigation shortly after 7:30 a.m. during our daily meeting, as we were all seated in our assigned leather chairs around the wooden conference table stretching the length of the Roosevelt Room. He instructed us to tell members of our respective staffs to preserve all materials that may be related to the leak, and said that the president has directed that we fully cooperate with this investigation. Al also said a memo to all White House staff would be emailed at 8:30 a.m. with specific instructions. Andy Card made it clear that the president wanted to get to the bottom of the matter and that staff should report relevant information to the Department of Justice. The room was eerily silent as all present listened intently to Al and Andy. The president and I chatted about this new development in the leak case that morning in the Oval, as well as during the short Marine One chopper flight from the south lawn of the White House to Andrews. The president, Dan Bartlett, and I all agreed that he should comment on the investigation, now that we officially had been notified about it. During the gaggle on Air Force One, I updated the press pool about the Justice Department notification to Al. I had already spoken with some reporters earlier that morning before leaving the White House, and they had already been given a copy of the memo Al had sent to all staff. The press pool is a small group of journalists that covers the president when there is insufficient space for the entire press corps or when other logistical reasons require it. There are usually about 15 in the pool, and that is the number of seats they have on Air Force One. They sit in the far back left of the plane, directly behind a section for Secret Service agents. Three spots are reserved for the print wire services, including the AP, Reuters, and Bloomberg News. One spot is held for the rotating print pooler, who comes from one of the major newspapers on the beat. One spot is for a radio correspondent, and one for a news magazine journalist, from Time, Newsweek, U.S. News, or National Journal. One for a broadcast correspondent or producer, two for the same network's camera person and sound person, and the rest for various still photographers. Anything they cover must be shared at the earliest possible time with the larger White House press corps. Based on what the president and I had agreed to early in the morning, I ended my opening comments to the pool by saying, "The president wants to get to the bottom of this as much as anyone and believes it should be pursued to the fullest extent. As I said yesterday, the president has always expressed his concern that leaking classified information is a serious matter and it should be taken very seriously. The president expects anyone in the administration to adhere to the highest standards of conduct." I added that the president believes Anyone who has information relating to this investigation should report that information to the Department of Justice. Following the president's Chicago meeting, the unruly, elbowing mob of the combined White House and local press pool was escorted into the small room where a roundtable discussion was to take place. The president, seated in the center surrounded by local business leaders and next to Mayor Daley, with whom he'd gradually developed a good relationship, started by making some comments about the economy. Then he said he would take a couple of questions. I had recommended two reporters and briefed him on the likely questions he would be asked. Deb Reichman, a White House reporter for the Associated Press, got the first crack. Do you think that the Justice Department can conduct an impartial investigation considering the political ramifications of the CIA leak, and why wouldn't a special counsel be better? There are too many leaks of classified information in Washington, the president said, and if there is a leak out of my administration, I want to know who it is. And if the person has violated law, the person will be taken care of. He added that he had confidence in the career Justice Department officials who were assigned to work on such investigations, and that he directed his administration to cooperate fully. Then the president called on Bob Kemper, since we are in his newspaper's hometown. Bob covered the White House for the Chicago Tribune and had covered the president since the 2000 campaign. Yes, let's see, Kemper, he's from Chicago, the president said. Where are you? Are you a Cubs or White Sox fan? There was laughter from those in the room. Wait a minute, that doesn't seem fair, does it? Kemper, undeterred by the president's good-natured needling, said, Yesterday we were told that Karl Rove had no role in it. Yes, the president interrupted. Have you talked to Karl, and do you have confidence in him? Kemper interjected. I don't know of anybody in my administration who leaked classified information, he said. If somebody did leak classified information, I'd like to know it, and we'll take the appropriate action. Mission accomplished. The president had made clear how seriously he took the investigation, how much he disliked leaks of classified information, and how much he wanted to get to the bottom of the matter. And he'd made clear that if anyone in his administration had been responsible for the leak, he or she would have to leave. The next morning's gaggle back at the White House signaled that the press was now turning toward a new rumored suspect in the leak, the Vice President's Chief of Staff, Scooter Libby. Here's how it started. Just as I was ending the gaggle, John Roberts, CBS News Chief White House Correspondent, said, One more question. You said the other day, emphatically, that you had received assurances from Karl Rove that he had nothing to do with this. Have you since received similar assurances from the Vice President's Chief of Staff? John, I'm not going to go down. I made this clear the other day. I'm not going to go down a list of every single member of the staff in the White House, I said as I started moving away from the podium. That's just one name, Roberts pleaded a little sarcastically to some laughter. I continued, and there was a specific accusation made, and I responded to that, but I'm not going to go down the list from this podium. It's a short list, though, Roberts said, garnering a few more laughs as I headed out the sliding door to the lower press office. I did not have much time to sit and critique the gaggle session with my staff that morning. President Uribe of Colombia would be meeting with the president shortly. Knowing the president's penchant for punctuality, I grabbed my notepad, told my staff that we would talk more before the briefing, and walked the 20 feet or so over to the Oval for the NSC pre-brief with the president and his meeting with Uribe. As I entered the Oval staff area, I ran into Scooter Libby. He frequently represented the vice president in world leader meetings when Cheney did not attend, and we often sat next to each other. Since we were both early, I asked if I could talk to him for a minute. We both stepped back into the small entryway connecting the Oval support staff area with the waiting area in the hallway. You need to know, I said, the press is starting to ask more questions about you and whether you might have leaked Plame's name. Scooter listened carefully. I told them that I was not going to go down a list of White House staff and answer whether every staffer was involved in the leak, I continued. I want you to know why. Now that there's an investigation underway, I can't put myself in that position. I want you to know I'm not trying to leave you hanging out there to dry. Scooter expressed his appreciation for the heads up, but said little more. He seemed to be okay with my strategy, although neither he nor anyone in his position would be happy about it. But I felt I had at least done my part to make sure he got the news directly from me rather than from the media. That Saturday, October 4th, was a relaxed, casual morning for me as I lounged around my single-bedroom downtown apartment, reading the Washington Post and the New York Times. I hadn't yet shaved or showered, having slept in until 7 a.m., a couple of hours later than on a weekday, and I was thinking about hitting the gym downstairs. I typically tried to enjoy my Saturday mornings from home, unless I had to go into the office. I tended to go in Sunday afternoons to get some work done ahead of the coming week. Of course, with a 24-hour news cycle, I was always on call and worked from home on weekends, even if I did not go into the office. The call from Andy Card came around 8:30 a.m. The president and vice president spoke this morning. They want you to give the press the same assurance for Scooter that you gave for Carl. I'm not a coffee drinker. I drink Diet Coke for my morning caffeine fix. I was still sipping on one, but what Andy just said jolted me more than the soft drink did. Okay, I said, not really indicating my instinctive disinclination to do what he was directing me to do. I told him that I would head into the office and talk to him more when I got there. As I showered and dressed to go to the White House, I asked myself why Scooter hadn't talked to me first if he had a problem with the approach I was taking. Based on Andy's comments, it was clear to me Scooter had enlisted the vice president to personally appeal to the president to have me publicly deny his involvement. Now that the investigation was fully underway, I didn't like the idea of singling out staff members to defend. Earlier in the week, I had spoken with Al and David, who'd advised me pretty strongly against commenting any further on matters pertaining to the investigation, including the names of individuals. I had already told the press I would not do it. And I knew if I opened the door for one, it would be virtually impossible to close it if other names started to surface. And the press would be curious why I'd asked Scooter about his involvement and why the White House wasn't asking every staff member the same question. But this was an order coming from on high. As a result, I was about to cross the line I'd drawn publicly once the investigation had gotten underway earlier in the week. After dropping my briefcase in my office, I headed over to Andy's.